Good morning. This is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. It's a weekly program about health, fitness, nutrition, and all things lifestyle. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Tim Henney. First this morning, we speak with Susanna Eubank, owner of the local Pure Bar Studio, about this hugely popular workout program that I think you participated in yesterday. Did you not?
Oh, did I ever? And my body will tell the story about how difficult it is, but really rewarding. Then we'll talk about the importance of rest with author Alex Pang. It's why you get more done when you work less. Oh, yeah. This is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. Stay with us. We'll be right back after these words.
This is Irene from Chateau Recovery, happy to support KPCW. Chateau works with adults struggling with co-occurring substance and mental health disorders. We utilize traditional and non-traditional approaches to empower clients. Information at 866-808-4160 or chateaurecovery.com. Addiction is a disease. Recovery is a choice.
When I'm 80, I still want to be shredding the powder. If you subscribe to that thought, the Live Well Center at Park City Hospital can help make it happen. An annual healthy lifestyle evaluation at Live Well Center will help you understand your current level of wellness and create an individualized plan to meet your goals. Our team of experts can help you keep up, speed up, and live up to your expectations, no matter your age or fitness level. Call 435-333-3535 to schedule your appointment. Park City Hospital is a not-for-profit community hospital and proudly supports KPCW.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. Well, Pure Bar is a total body workout that utilizes the ballet bar to perform small isometric movements, which burn fat, sculpt muscles, and create long, lean physiques. Oh, yes, and it's painful. Pure Bar, and I'm only saying that's my added editorial because I did it yesterday, as we just said. So back to my introduction. Pure Bar was founded in 2001. It became a franchise in 2009 and now has 375 studios across the country, one of which is right here in Park City. And owner Susanna Eubank now joins us, which is only fair since I joined her at 6 a.m. yesterday. And, I feel so much longer and leaner ever since. Susanna, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, I'm so glad that I came out and experienced Pure Bar because I had not taken a bar class anywhere ever, but I've wanted to for a long time. And tell us about how you got involved with it.
Well, there was a studio back where I'm from in Lexington, Kentucky, and so I kind of heard about it there where I grew up. And then when I went to college in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, they opened a studio there, and so I kind of got involved, was a client, and then I started working the desk there and then became a teacher, and then I managed that studio for a year or so. And then fell in love with Pure Bar right from the start and decided I really wanted to, you know, pursue it. So brought it out here. Yes.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So when did you open here in Park City?
We opened in November of 2014.
Okay. So you've been around a while.
Yes.
It came highly recommended to me by a friend who's addicted to it. And as it turned out yesterday in the class, I was side by side with this incredibly sculpted woman. And afterwards, I asked her, how often do you come to this class? Not imagining that you could go more than once a week, because after all, you have to recover. She said, oh, I come 5 days a week.
Yes,
so
yes.
People get really into it.
Yes, we have people. I mean, you can come 7 days a week. It's definitely safe to do 7 days a week. And we do have people that do that. And we have, you know, we recommend obviously more days on than off with exercising to see a difference. But yeah, we have people that come Monday through Friday, try to maybe hit one on the weekend as well. But we offer classes 7 days a week.
When's it going to be safe for Lynn to go back?
Lynn can come back today.
I don't think so.
I'm
not
bringing
from what
you
I've
with
heard.
Me.
Yes, you have to come along.
But, you know,
well.
A lot of these things, even like CrossFit, it takes a while to, and I do another one called Bow Collective out of the Colby campus on 224. And every, you know, if I stop doing it for a while, which I did recently, I took the summer off, and I'm really active in the summer. I run and I bike and I do all these things. And then I go back to Bow Collective, and it takes me a good 2-3 weeks to start to get through the soreness.
Right. We see
Lynn
that.
And Lynn was complaining a little yesterday about soreness.
Sore. Yes, we do. We recommend when you're sore to definitely come back the next day. It helps stretch it out and all that sort of thing, even if you are like, oh, I can barely walk. I don't want to come back. But if you do take time off, if you've started and do take some time off, when you come back, definitely, you know, you'll be sore again and feel like it's harder, but you'll jump right back into it easier than when you first started the first time, because Pure Barre is a little bit of a learning curve to it. So it does take a few classes to really get into that mind-body connection. But once you do, it clicks, and then you'll your body just kind of...
And I think I know where it's located, but I'm not sure. Why don't you
tell us where the studio is? Yes, so we're in Kimball Junction. If you're looking at Smith's Grocery Store, we're to the right of that. Same areas like Michael's and TJ Maxx and all that in Kimball Junction. So.
And what was it... I mean, you said you became... You worked at the desk and you were exposed to it, but is there something that really engaged you? And Lynn used the term of people get addicted to it.
Yes.
She has a friend who's addicted.
Yes.
So what is that addictive quality to this particular style of workout?
Oh, I think everyone is maybe a little bit different, but I have always been active but never really loved exercising. And with Pure Barre, I didn't exactly feel like I was exercising all the time. It wasn't, you know... It was something I enjoyed doing, and it's an hour. It's so fast. It's set to upbeat, fast music with the strong beat, and it's musically driven. So when you're in there, you feel just like it's going so fast. You know, you're in ending class, and you're like, oh, I've already worked every major muscle group, and, you know, go so fast. It's the people and everything. It's the great environment.
What about the 6 a.m. part?
The
that
6
would be really
part.
Difficult for some of us.
Yeah, some people walk in there maybe not all the way awake, but by the time they leave, they definitely are. And
but
maybe that's the best time to do it when you're half asleep.
You do a series of classes, right?
Yes.
It's not all at 6 a.m.
No,
Lynn,
no, no.
Lynn
it's not all
gone
at 6 a.m.
At a different
right,
time.
She could have. We do offer 8:30, 9:45, 6 days a week, and then other classes throughout the day as well as the evening.
So what I really loved about it is that it's sort of isometrics, but you have to do these really difficult things while you're isometricizing.
Yes.
And so explain kind of the technique and why it's effective in lengthening and sculpting and things like that.
Okay. So with those small movements, you really engage those muscles and muscles maybe that you're not normally used to working. And when you do that, you hold those positions. It isolates that muscle. So say in thigh work, when you're pulsing down or just moving 1 inch or holding that movement, then you, after you do that a few times, your muscles start to shake. And when you do that, that's what's changing the muscle, changing the shape of the muscle and toning it and all that. So once that happens, after you fatigue your muscles, then you stretch them out. That's what creates that long, lean muscle. And you do that in arms, thighs, seat, abs, all the way through class. And when you hold those isometric movements, we might have you, like in seat work, you were maybe lifting your leg and then holding it there or squeezing in, and all of that, you're holding those movements, which change the muscle. Instead of a fast bounce or a fast movement, it really helps to tone the muscle by keeping it contracted.
Now, while I'm sore from my triceps down to my calves, I will say that it felt really, it seems as though you concentrate on hips and core.
Yeah, so core, you know, we stress throughout the entire class from start to finish, but we do start with the full body warm up that focuses on the abs, warms up like the thighs and arms in the beginning with weights. And then when it comes, we do a lot of seat work. So that's probably what you're talking about too, because we do 2 seat exercises on each side, targeting the base of your seat as well as your outer and inner seat, and thigh work in the beginning and abs basically through the throughout the entire class because you want to always keep those contracted, especially in seat works. Yesterday we did the seat in the center of the room, so we didn't utilize the ballet bar yesterday, but sometimes you do and you'll be standing on one leg, and so you'll really want to use your core. So when you're standing on one leg, to help with balance and that sort of thing.
So how does this relate back to the practice of ballet?
So, I mean, there's elements like with the ballet bar, you don't have to have any dance experience. I don't have any dance experience. It's more yoga, Pilates. There's elements of Pilates in it more so than ballet, but just the ballet bar to use for a support. And dancers gravitate towards it just because of the ballet bar and, you know, that sort of workout, I guess. So,
do any men come in there?
We do have some men. We didn't have any yesterday at 6 a.m. because you didn't join her yesterday.
Yeah.
No, but we
do have some women
that do bring their husbands, and we sometimes do a bring on the men class. There are men that are clients at Pure Bar Studios, but we don't, we have some, but, you know, more women gravitate towards it, definitely.
And like some of the other workout programs around town, there's a social component to
yes.
what you're doing.
Yes.
And how big of a component is that? I mean, you're working out, but you're also mm-hmm. creating a social environment. Does that go outside the class, or is it contained just to the studio, that
social
engagement?
Yeah. No, we've, seen friendships form and all of that with our teachers and clients and doing things outside of Pure Bar. We do, we host events within our studio. We have like some wine nights after classes and events that we'll do with our clients. And, you know,
is that kind of a new thing in your experience with workout programs? I mean, it seems from my experience with mm-hmm. events mm-hmm. through the years, you know, if you had a big event, at the end of the event, there's maybe some socializing
right.
that goes on. But it's kind of new to me, and it seems to be across the board these days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was doing CrossFit a few years ago, there was an emphasis and a focus on the social component and building
yeah.
a community
yes.
around that activity. And the same thing happens at the Bow Collective. They do all sorts of activities away from the class.
Yes.
They go skiing together.
Yes.
They have cocktail hours together. They go on trips together. And mm-hmm. you're mentioning the same
well,
thing. And there
I
seems
think,
to be a common theme.
I think that when, you know, people have the same interest of the exercising and doing something together, and then they do it, do other things socially together, and then it creates that bond, you know, within the studio. They get, you know, to encourage each other to go work out, to, you know, boost that confidence, boost the energy. It's always more fun, I think, to exercise when you do have a buddy to do it with, and you do feel like you have that social aspect as well.
So how many people are there doing the bar, the Pure Bar practice through your studio now? Do you have, I mean, it's not membership, but you must have sort of an idea of, I've got 50 clients or 200 clients.
Well, you
or,
know, it really varies with us because Pure Bar is so well known across the U.S. and we also are in Canada now as well. And so like, since Park City is such a transient town, we have a lot of people that come in and want to take classes from other studios. So we offer class packs. We offer an auto pay contracts where you can come unlimited for 6 months to a year and different packages like that. So we, you know, a lot of our clients are part-time as well. So, and that's been nice because Pure Bar is so well-known.
So in terms of training, mm-hmm. what kind of training do you have a background in, exercise physiology or training, or how do they?
So with Pure Bar, you're selected to go, and then you are trained through Pure Bar with the Pure Bar technique, either in Denver, Colorado, or Spartanburg, South Carolina. And so you do a series of training. I went to Denver, Colorado.
Oh, I was going to think yes. you might have gone back to sort of the southern parts.
Yes,
of the
when I started with Pure Bar, they did not have the Spartanburg, South Carolina training studio yet. So I went to Denver, and after that, you do a series of trainings, and you have to do you have to be certified through the master trainers with Pure Bar and continue your training with them.
And so it makes me wonder a bit about the training. and I want to say because I felt so much pain yesterday, but really this concept of fatiguing the muscles, you kind of have to know what you're doing,
right?
Because I know like with CrossFit, there's some trouble that can come from fatiguing the muscles and not exactly knowing how to regulate it.
Right. So with Pure Bar, it's you are doing a certain number of reps. So you're not overdoing that. It's, you know, low impact exercise. So it's safe for people with injuries. We have so many people that have knee replacements, hip replacements here in Park City that take with us. And I mean, we had a lady that came in with a cane and now she is totally on her feet. She's rocking class, fabulous every time. I mean, and we love it. So you're not overdoing that muscle group, say in thigh work, you're not doing a ton of reps where you would exhaust that muscle.
Okay.
You know, so you're doing it a safe number of times and then stretching that out and protecting it. You're not doing big movements. So the small movements do help protect your joints.
Okay. Well, darn, I was hoping I could blame my feeling injured on you.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. I'm just kidding. Yes. There was also in the class yesterday morning a pregnant woman.
Oh, yes.
And I thought, wow, what a wonderful thing. And also to my annoyance and dismay, I noticed that she had an easier time doing some of the things that than I did.
Yes, it is. It is safe for people to do while pregnant, and we do have several pregnant women, and they can take modifications as they need to, and it's safe to do all the way through your pregnancy, and then they come back after. We just had a client who gave birth about 3-4 weeks ago, and she came back in 3 weeks after, so she was ready to get back, and she felt strong, and
So and talking about that and post you know recovery from birth, do you do pelvic floor specific exercises or is that just something that's kind of wrapped into?
It's kind of wrapped into it all. Like some of the parts yesterday when we were in ab work and doing lower ab work towards the end is very beneficial to them during their pregnancy and after, and all that ab work that you did on the floor yesterday kind of helps them get right back in, get those abs back. They might not have exact feeling there right afterwards, but it does help them get right back into it.
Yeah.
So I have to tell a little story that's completely off topic, but you'll remember these days when you and I used to swim over at the Mark in the, during the summer in the pool.
The Masters
swimming. And I swam there for, I don't know, 3 or 4 years when I was doing triathlons. And, of course, during that period of time, there were a number of women who came and went through pregnancies. And they used to just kick my butt. Lois Major was one. You were one. KK was one. And you know, and I would just sit there and go, this is, I mean, when they're not pregnant, that's one thing. But when they're pregnant and I can't keep up with them,
I know.
This is really embarrassing. And I was complaining to my lane partner, David Weiner, one time. And he said, well, they have an unfair advantage. They have all that, all those hormones coursing through their bodies.
Yeah, unfair advantage. well, we are in awe of our pregnant women because they, like I said, absolutely rock it. And you witnessed it yesterday. And she is so strong. And the one that I was talking about that just came back after 3 weeks after delivering her baby, and she, I mean, was probably the strongest one in class some days. I was like, you are amazing, truly. So it's awesome to see all that
now
happen.
Are you the instructor, or do you
do have other
team?
Teachers as well. Yeah. There are 7 of us total, and I do teach as well.
So. And so that keeps everybody fresh and lively.
Yes. You won't ever get the same class twice at Pure Bar. It follows the same format that you took yesterday, but the exercises change and everything is fresh every time.
So I noticed it was very up-tempo. Mm-hmm. There was, you know, I was picturing sort of this ballet experience, I guess. And then there was this up-tempo music and you've got the headset going.
Right.
And so is the idea for that just to keep your pulse rate up or just...
Keep your heart rate up. If the song is slower, maybe in a stretch section, or you did a little bit of ab work work up against the bar and the music was a little bit softer there. But then we pick that heart rate back up afterwards. And you always want to keep, you know, keep engaged. It's definitely nice at 6 a.m. to get the music pumping and get you awake.
And of course, you wore your Swan Lake ballet outfit, right?
I did. Oh, yeah. I was really expecting ballet. Imagine my surprise. I did want to ask you about some of the ballet type well, they're not really movements, but you're on your toes a lot.
Right.
And I notice, oh, my feet are kind of sore today, but I would imagine it's very strengthening.
Oh, yes.
I have a off and on occurrence of plantar fasciitis, okay. So I was wondering if that would help or what the reason is.
Well, we sometimes, if people do have injuries in their feet, they can stay on flat feet. But the second you rise to your tippy toes, you start engaging your thighs right away. So the second you rise up and then you bend your knees and you're holding that position, even if you're just holding that position and not moving from there, if you stay there long enough, you're going to start to shake without any movement. And the second you add something else, you've already engaged your thighs by rising up on your toes. And so the second you do a move from there, you're getting into it even more.
Mm-hmm. I think only when I have been rock climbing and you get that sewing machine leg, until yesterday morning. I had only had that experience before rock climbing, but now that I've done Pure Bar.
Yes.
It was really fun. I really enjoyed it.
Okay, so you too.
Yes.
You've done it and you thought it was really fun.
Mm-hmm.
You do it all the time.
Right.
You're addicted.
Right.
So convince me. I'm a guy and I've got a lot of things that I'm doing.
Well,
and
how about this? I noticed that you're behind has been sagging.
Oh, and it needs to be lifted. Okay, we can take care of that for you.
I'm not sure.
We have some men
that has been recently. I think that's been. There's only so much you can do.
The men that we do have come work out all the time and do maybe heavy lifting, that sort of thing. And they come in class and they can barely hold up the 2 pound weights. You know, so it does, it gets to those muscles that you're not used to working in the gym. It helps you with your core, with skiing. Even we have a client who brings her son because he's a ski racer, and she's brought him to help with his ski racing, and he said that it has helped him a lot, you know, with balance, with able to keep his core in the entire time.
Oh, so it's another one of, you know, I don't like going to gyms, but every time I do one of these programs, or whether it's CrossFit or whether it's the Bow Collective, the way I explain it to people who say, why do you do it? I say, it's because I do movements and work muscles that I would never otherwise engage.
Right.
I mean, I run, I bike, and I cross-country ski, and I used to swim, and I lay on the couch, and I don't engage those sorts of muscles unless I'm going to one of those classes, and I'm hearing that this would engage a whole nother group of muscles that I would find it very difficult.
It's a great complement to other exercises, and we have runners that do it. It's a great complement to running, skiing, all activities like that.
All right. Well, how do we find you? How do you get in touch? How do you sign up?
Okay. Well, you can go to our website, purebar.com/UT-Park City, or you can just go to purebar.com, search locations, Park City. You can sign up online through the website, and you can email us always at parkcity@purebar.com as well. And we're located in Kimball Junction at 1708 Uinta Way.
All right. So, well, yes. Susanna Eubank, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having
me. And I will see you again soon.
Sounds good. We look forward to it, as well as Tim. We look forward to having you. Yes.
All right. This is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. Stay with us. We'll be back now to talk about rest, why you get more done when you work less and rest more when we return.
Hi, this is Chris Eggleton.
And Chris Retzer of Destination Hotels Utah, proud sponsor of KPCW.
Since 2005, we've provided nightly rental, retail, and community management services
to New Park Town Center, Prospector Square, Empire Pass, and Toohey.
More information about Destination Hotels Utah is at dhutah.com.
Support for KPCW comes from Crandall Capital with New Park Town Center. With urban amenities and services and home to restaurants, shops, entertainment, lodging, and residences. More information about New Park Town Center at 801-303-5440.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. You're going to try the bar class, the Pure Bar.
Well, I was just telling Suzanne I do have the right outfit.
Yes, you do. A rainbow-colored tutu. We've seen that before. So we're going to be speaking in just a moment with a visiting scholar at Stanford University. It's Alex Soojung Kim Pang, and he's written a new book about rest, and it's about the relationship between work and rest. And it's really fascinating. So he's got all kinds of stories. But while we're waiting to get him on the phone, you know, I've been wondering recently about my use of melatonin.
Do you still use it?
I come and go with it because at the end of the day, I think it's something that we produce naturally. If I take it at night, I'm going to disable that natural ability to produce it. And so I was looking it up, and, you know, we love to talk about Gretchen Reynolds. We love to talk to her, and she does that Well blog in the New York Times. And she answers the question, and what she does is takes the current research and condenses it, puts it into layman's terms, and talks about melatonin. And what she says is that for adults, it is safe, although they don't know what the potential long-term effects are. They are worried about young children taking melatonin, however. And the reason they give is, again, it all has to do with your pineal gland in the brain, which ramps up the production of this hormone melatonin in the evening as the light goes down to encourage sleep. And then it turns down the production of melatonin in the early morning hours, of course.
I think my melatonin production cycle is off.
Really?
Yeah. Because I keep waking up at like 1 in the morning and then falling asleep at 4, and then I'm exhausted when the alarm goes off.
Right. Well, yes, I'm there with you. So it's that 2 a.m. thing, and that's usually when I take melatonin, which then puts me into a deep sleep, and then I have a hard time when the alarm goes off. But they say that short-term use of the melatonin, synthetic melatonin, is generally considered safe, but it can have side effects: headaches, dizziness, go figure, daytime grogginess, and which can pose all kinds of risks, of course. But it can also interfere with blood pressure, diabetes, and blood thinning medications. So as I said before, less is known about the melatonin's effects in children, but they are suggesting, research is suggesting, that at least in theory, it could have effects on developing reproductive, cardiovascular, immune and metabolic systems. So to me, that's saying, yeah, you might want to limit your...
One of those disclaimers on the ads for all those pharmaceuticals that you see. It's like after the disclaimer, I'm like, whoa, why would anybody take that?
I know.
Yeah.
Exactly. So short-term use is okay. You don't want to make it an every night habit, and that's always good to know.
So you're sitting here watching base camp go up behind you, and I know you aren't necessarily sitting here every day watching base camp go up, but if you were still working on the news staff at KPCW, mm-hmm. you would have been. So
yes.
And I know you have watched base camp go up in the past, and one of the really exciting things happening this year at base camp is Sundance has offered the base camp as a platform for the city to tell their story about our carbon reduction goals and our renewable goals and our energy as a critical priority, and integrating that with Sundance's new programmatic theme this year called A New Climate. So on Sunday, the 22nd, we are hosting and having and holding a panel discussion and then a live stream of the Sundance panel discussion that's happening up at the Egyptian, which I believe starts at 2:30. So within base camp at 1 o'clock, we're going to invite people from the community and the public into the 300-seat venue. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a panel discussion, which is going to be quite exciting, with Christopher Nelson from the Georgetown Energy Prize, Peter Metcalf, who's a local advocate for open space and for energy in general and conservation, and represents the business community with recreation interests. And he wrote a great op-ed to our leaders and the governor recently about their need to put a greater focus on public lands and open spaces, and how recreation really deserves a seat at the table because of the economic driver that it creates for our state. And then Luke Carton, who's the sustainability manager for Park City Municipal, and Mary Krista Smith from Summit Community Power Works. So a very exciting opportunity that Sundance has offered the city, and one that we're looking forward to capitalizing on. So that's Sunday the 22nd at 1 o'clock, and going to be really exciting. And I get to moderate.
Yes, I was going to say, I think I heard you were moderating. That'll be great. So again, 1 o'clock right here at the base camp, just in the Bob Wells Plaza, right beyond the KPCW studios. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, let's take a quick break. We'll be back with Alex Pang to talk about rest and why is it so important, and which famous people around the world get a lot of rest.
Hi, I'm Davey Ratchford from Park City Mountain and proud supporter of KPCW. Park City Mountain hosts winter events throughout the season, including the annual Torchlight Parade, New Year's Eve celebration, Spring Groove, and more. More information about all Park City Mountain events can be found at parkcitymountain.com.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. Well, Americans work anywhere from 35 to 50 hours a week and beyond, especially during the Sundance Film Festival, which puts us in first place for most hours logged among workers in other top world economies. It stands to reason that if the majority of our efforts and time are going towards work, other parts of our lives are getting the short end of the stick. The consequences of putting work before sleep are becoming dire. Side effects range from impaired judgment, mood, and memory to serious health problems such as obesity and diabetes. Alex Pang, the author of the book Rest, goes inside neuroscience labs, historical archives, and startup offices to discover what we get wrong about rest and how we can get it right. Rest, it turns out, is a skill. It's like breathing. It's something we all do naturally, but just as athletes learn to control their breathing to perform at their peak, creative people learn to rest in ways that give them more energy, sharper ideas, and a better life. Alex Pang, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thanks very much. It's great to be with you.
Wonderful to have you. And What a topic that seems so simple, and yet, as you point out, it's not at all. Why do we not know how to rest?
Well, for a couple reasons. And one is that we tend to think of rest as just sort of zoning out in front of the television, sitting on the couch, or it is a negative space defined just by the absence of work. And so it is passive and uninteresting. And in many of our lives, it feels like a sign of weakness that if you have to rest, then or if you're not really up to living the kind of modern, fast-paced life that is demanded of us all. But in reality, for no matter what kind of work you do and the kinds of demands that it puts upon you, rest turns out to be incredibly important, both physically, obviously, but also for recharging your mental batteries, and it turns out for helping you be more creative and live a kind of better, more sort of well-balanced, reflective life.
Rest is one of my favorite activities.
Good for you.
And I actually, Alex, I view it as an activity.
Yes, and in fact, it turns out that the best kinds of rest, if you think of rest as time that you spend recovering or recharging the mental and physical energy that you spend at work, that often the best kinds of rest are actually active rather than passive. You know, this is why if you have the instinct after a long day that you'd really like to go for a walk or go to the gym, that's your body is actually saying something very wise, which is that it seems counterintuitive that exercise would provide a bigger boost than, you know, than just sort of sitting. But you know, many of our lives, and a lot of science confirms that activity actually is more restful than passive act, you know, than just being passive. So good for you.
Yay, Tim. you know, I heard this thing, and it kind of relates back to rest and how we do it. And it's about, you know, the typical work week and getting the weekend off. And it comes to about Sunday at noon. And a lot of people actually stop resting because they're anticipating Monday morning coming. And I read something that suggested that you go out and be active all the way through till Sunday night. And that way you've actually maximized your rest and your weekend. And you're not, I mean, do we not get rest because we're anticipating the future and we're not really taking the present to rest?
You know, that's a great point. And it actually is the case that people who are in situations where they have to think about work, like if you are, you know, sort of on call and you might have to go into work, you know, an unexpected shift, those people get less rest than those of us who are able to sort of, you know, put the office, put work behind us, and not have to think about it again until Monday morning. For people who are in really interesting, really engaging jobs, it's actually very important for them to do things that are really stimulating and challenging, in part because it gives their minds a chance to unplug from the office and to think about other things. Winston Churchill talked about painting as a great pastime for him because when he was painting, he couldn't think about politics. And otherwise, you know, and if he didn't do this, then he would always be thinking about the next bill or debate. And he realized that as much as he loved his job, that wasn't good for him and it wasn't getting him good results. And so sort of the ability, you know, the more we are able to detach from work, as psychologists say, put it out of our mind, not check our email, not think about it, the better we're going to be come Monday morning when we go back.
And Alex, are there certain people who find it easier to do that? And I'm wondering, I don't really know how to frame this question, but it seems like there are environmental and social drivers that are telling us that we shouldn't disengage, that we should be active all the time, that we should have thoughts in our mind, that we should be ready for work on a moment's notice. You know, if we're not working, we're wasting time and all that kind of thing.
Right.
And so that's environmental. But there also might be a more genetic component, a nature component, which is some people just find it easier to be in the present moment and disengage from those future anxieties.
Yes. You know, I think you're absolutely right that there are a whole host of social pressures and kind of organizational and economic ones that sort of encourage us or demand that we keep thinking about work even when we're not there. And it actually does take time to learn how to disengage from the workplace and from its demands, and to learn that there actually is value to it. Is there a genetic component to it? You know, people are debating that. Is there a psychological component to it in the sense that people who are more alpha types have a harder time doing it than people who are more laid back? Probably. And I think that is something that each of us needs to factor when thinking about what's really going to work for us. People who have jobs that are easy to put out of their minds, or are people who have an easier time sort of switching modes, may need a different kind of rest than, let's say, an emergency room doctor who is highly committed to her work and, you know, who sees a lot of difficult and traumatic stuff over the course of a day. She's probably going to need something that is much more physically and mentally engaging and challenging than someone who's working in a much lower pressure atmosphere, who is themselves a much kind of lower key person.
You know, I think I in my life have experienced a lot of what you're describing, and what Lynn mentioned about that Sunday afternoon anxiety and re-engagement and my work week used to kick in literally on Sunday afternoons, and it really bothered me. And that's when I worked on Wall Street, and I was anticipating reentry. And that's what I always called it. It was the reentry anticipation. And man, did it mess with me on Sunday afternoons. And as a kid, I experienced kind of the other part, which is I used to sleep a ton as a kid. And I know there are children who, you know, get 8 hours or 9 hours and wake up real early in the morning. And you say, well, their circadian rhythm is, you know, determined that they need to be bright and cheery at 7 a.m. I was one of those kids. If you let me sleep, I would sleep until 1 p.m. and get 16 hours of sleep. And then I got kind of shamed for it. And not, you know, I wouldn't say shame, but maybe guilted in that was a poor use of time and I was making poor choices. So, you know, it's interesting. I think that probably a lot of us experience that full spectrum at some point in our lives.
It is. You're quite right. And, you know, it's also the case that certainly we know that kids' sleep patterns are different from adults, and indeed that, you know, for teenagers, it's different, the needs are different than order for toddlers. But it's also the case that for kids, other kinds of rest, just, you know, doing nothing at all, turns out to be psychologically really beneficial. Kids who have either time to themselves for hobbies, for doing sort of making their own choices about how to spend their time, rather than being rushed from, you know, the piano lesson to sort of the playing field, are more psychologically independent and resilient and often empathetic than kids who don't have those kinds of opportunities. But, you know, the signals that either sleeping a lot or doing nothing is unproductive and a sign of kind of moral failure, sort of ethical lapse, is something that starts pretty young and consequently makes it even harder for us to kind of rethink and overcome.
So interesting. You know, you talk a lot of, in your book, little anecdotes about famous nappers and the relation to creativity and leadership. And let's start with Salvador Dali, for example.
Sure. Now, okay, so yeah, the great Spanish kind of neo-surrealist painter, he actually had a practice where after lunch, you know, and usually a couple glasses of wine, which I think helped this process, would sit in a chair with something heavy in his hand. And as he was drifting off to sleep, he would have these wild ideas, you know, that as you can imagine from someone who painted what he painted. And the object would fall from his hand, hit the ground, and wake him up just enough so that he could sketch out whatever he had been thinking about. And then he would take the key again and fall back asleep. And he would do this for 45 minutes or so. And he claimed that he experienced this as a kind of sort of excavation of subconscious ideas that his mind had already produced. And what he was doing was kind of diving into sort of his creative mind in order to recover them.
Oh, that's fascinating.
You know, that is.
Yeah. You know, and the amazing thing is that in this book, he talks about all kinds of completely crazy ways to stimulate creativity, stuff that, you know, nobody would ever try. But the section on napping is really precise and shockingly lucid for Dali, and it, you know, tells us something about how important it was for his creative process. Now, there are a lot of other people for whom, you know, naps are actually a really important part of their day. And we think of them as things that, you know, four-year-olds do on little yoga mat kinds of things. But, you know, it used to be that it was completely socially acceptable for presidents or prime ministers or, you know, or of any busy person to take a nap in the afternoon. And the recognition was that they were, you know, they weren't weak. They were getting recharged. You know, Winston Churchill, again, my favorite comparison is that Churchill, during World War II, even at the height of the Blitz, would take a nap after work or after lunch. His staff talked about it as being really inspiring because even as German bombs were falling, it showed that he had the confidence in his people that they were in the end going to triumph, and that if something happened while he was asleep, they could handle it. Now, on the other hand, as we now know from sort of a great book about sort of drug use in the Nazi era, Hitler stayed awake for days at a time injecting methamphetamine. And you can, I think in this case, the results speak for themselves. We know who won World War II and who lost.
Hey, Alex, you talk about nap, and it sparked my curiosity about the sort of difference in naps. There's the power nap, it's called the cat nap, the quick nap, the 15, 20-minute nap. And if you exceed that for some people, it then actually can be a little counterproductive in that it makes them lethargic. But if you can kind of capture that right amount of time, it's incredibly re-energizing.
Exactly. Now, 15 to 20 minutes is usually of enough so that you get a recharge. But the reason you get sort of lethargic if you sleep longer than that is that you shift from one sort of sleep cycle to another. And, we go through actually several different levels of sleep over the course of a night. And if you wake up in the middle of one of those cycles, then that's what causes trouble, causes what sleep scientists call sleep pressure or inertia. And so this is why a 15-minute or 20-minute nap can be as restorative as drinking another cup of coffee, but can deliver its results in a relatively short period. It's also another illustration of a kind of rest that's a skill, right? If you do it for 20 minutes, it's great. If you do it for 40, then it's going to be a problem.
Yeah. You talk about, not that I want to move away from napping, because I love to nap. I can do a 5-minute afternoon nap and be very restored.
Do you ever lay down and think you're going to take a 5 to 10 minute nap, and then you get up and you're like, well, that was too bad. I didn't even fall asleep. And you look at the clock and it's like, wait a minute, 45 minutes is gone. How did that happen?
That has happened. And what about when we do that, Alex? Have we blown it?
I think that it's like trying to meditate and not being able to really calm your mind down. You acknowledge the lapse and you move on. On the other hand, I think that the opposite example is also it's important to acknowledge that, you lay down for 10 or 15 minutes and you don't fall asleep. But it turns out, as sleep scientists have found, that actually just closing your eyes and letting your mind just kind of settle offers not quite as much benefit as going to sleep, but a lot more benefit than if you had spent that time, checking your email 2 more times compulsively and just seeing what was on Facebook or headline news.
Right. Well, you say this is a book also about work, even though it's called Rest, a paradox, but not really, because there is, as it turns out, a huge relationship. So let's talk a little bit about that relationship and how our rest can really dictate and add to our work. And this kind of gets me into what I was going to ask you about. Oh, Tim's taking a nap over there on the other side of the studio. about these walking meetings and things like that.
Right. So I think that the first off, that walking meetings are valuable because walking turns out to be a good creative stimulus. It helps unlock ideas or kind of loosen up our minds some. Walking meetings are also good because they tend to be shorter and more to the point. It's easier to waste time when you're sitting around a table and people can have their hands under the desk, with their devices and sort of dividing their attention between you and sort of their inboxes. So because of the creative stimulus, the increased concentration, and the fact that you're out and simply walking, walking meetings are a great thing. But I think we also tend to think of work and rest as competitors, that the time that we spend resting is time that we are taking away from our potentially productive hours. And I want to push back on that idea. And or help people understand that in a good life, we should see work and rest as partners. Partners in the sense, first of all, that the right kinds of rest actually help you be better on the job. They help you be more productive. They help you be more creative. If you're working in services and working with other people, rest is important for helping you be more sort of sympathetic and empathetic. But it's also the case that if you're working in creative enterprises that sort of demand high degrees of concentration and sort of being innovative, that learning how to practice what I call deliberate rest, where in particular you're layering periods of intense focused work of generally, you know, 3 or 4 hours, followed by periods of rest where you're going out, you're, let's say, going on a long walk, or for a swim, doing something else like this that allows your mind to relax, actually creates a kind of cycle where the things that you were working on in that 4 hour period are allowed to kind of carry over into your sort of subconscious, and it keeps on working on them while you are occupied by this other thing. And so, what's going on is that, or if your subconscious mind, which is going to be working, thinking about something anyway, no matter what, is kind of tempted to take up these problems. And this is why you have many stories of artists, mathematicians, or writers who have these, you know, eureka moments or these aha moments when they are out in the woods or, you know, in the shower or in these apparently unexpected moments, have these have these insights that are important in their work. What's going on is that their creative minds have sort of taken up a problem that they've been working on for sort of some time and essentially kind of finishing it for them. And this turns out to be so important that many of history's most creative and prolific people sort of structured their days in part to give themselves time to nudge that kind of process along. To invite their creative minds, their subconscious, to sort of take up problems that had that were sort of foremost in their conscious minds, and sort of they benefited greatly from it. And so in this way, we can make rest not just something that restores our energy, but also literally improves our work by helping us be more creative.
Mm, it's such good stuff. And I just, we have to let you go, Alex, but I did want to mention that we have a paradigm here in Park City of the walking meeting, and we call it the chairlift meeting here in Park City because
awesome. There
lots of work happens on the ski hill, which is a beautiful thing. So, Alex Soojun Kim Pang, thank you so much for joining us. The book is called Rest, Why You Get More Done When You Work Less. Thanks for joining us, Alex.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And we'll be right back after these words.
Miller Orthodontics is a proud supporter of The Randy Barton Show. Since 1988, my wife and I have provided a combined 45 years of orthodontic care. For our Invisalign patients, we provide digital scanning and imaging technology that eliminates the need for wet molds of your teeth. More information is at m2ortho.com.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air, Cruise, and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com. Park City Bike Demos, Kearns Boulevard next to Adolph's, parkcitybikedemos.com. Long, Reimer, Weiniger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
This is KPCW.